Welcome to Patricia Sheridan's Breakfast With, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's weekly Q&A with the people behind the headlines.
Today I talk with actress Shannon Doherty of 90210 fame. She's coming out with a new book this November called Badass, a hard-earned guide to living life with style and the right attitude. It's filled with all kinds of advice, everything from how to do a French manicure to breakup tips and vacation spots, as well as breaking free of insecurities. We talk about that, her journey from bad girl to wise woman, and her own control issues, as well as the original Hallmark film, Growing the Big One, she stars in, and so much more.
In watching the movie, I was sort of struck by the idea that your character chooses the small town life, and I was wondering about you. Are you more of a country girl or more of a city girl?
I'm a little bit of both. I think that I prefer to live outside of a major city, not too far away from it. So when I want it, it's there. I definitely like a little bit more of a quiet life and a bit more room. My country life happens to be a beach as opposed to open fields. That to me is ideal. But, with that being said, I'm also the person that, you know, goes to New York at least once a month. And I love New York. I want to always have somewhere else to be.
Now, would you say the movie is tapping in to a desire for a less complicated, stuff-oriented life? I mean, partially because of the economy and or maybe even our reaction to decades of mass consumption. But the movie sort of hits that note. Would you think that's true?
I do think that's true. I mean, I think that in the movie you have, a small town where big business is coming in and threatening to take over. You know, people, my grandfather in the movie has overextended himself and has a bank loan that's due, and she has to do whatever she has to do to sort of make things right. And I think everybody has felt that pressure. I think that sure, no one's really exempt from what's going on in this world and the economy and sort of the decadence that we were all living in for a little bit there, which always sort of comes back and bites you in the ass a little later. And I think that this country definitely is going through that. As a country, you hope that you learn from your past mistakes. You know, we'll see. History, you know, we have a tendency to repeat history, so let's hope that we actually learn from this one. But with that being said, it's also, you know, it's also a simple movie that's about family and relationships and discovering who you are and what your priorities are in life. And they don't have to be like my characters, but she, I think my character goes on her own journey of finding her heart and what's the most important thing to her. You know, she was on this sort of fast track and very determined to have her own radio show and be in a city and be super successful. And coming home, things definitely changed for her.
Have you ever had to make that kind of a decision? Or if not, has your career...
Not really. I mean, you know, I think that what's important is that for the girls and the women who watch the movie, that they understand that I don't think this character made her choice simply for a man. I don't think that she walked away from her career in the city for a man. I don't think anybody should have to make that decision in their life. You know, there's a way to sort of work around love and your career and have all of it. And without having to, everybody has to make sacrifices, but you certainly don't have to give up a career in order to have love. I think that her decision was based more on what she found there about herself. And yes, granted, she found a man that she fell in love with, but she also found friends. She also found a sense of belonging. She found home. I think it was more about that for her than just for the guy. Yeah, I mean, the closest thing I've ever had to come to with sort of a decision like that is when my dad was sick, do I take a job or do I stay home? And that was never even a decision for me. It was very clear that I would pass up the job in order to stay with my dad when he was in the hospital. But that's pretty much the closest I've ever come. I've never had to sacrifice a relationship for my career before.
This leads me into the book. In the book, you talk about the need for soul-searching and admitting your faults and just sort of being right out front. How challenging was that for you when you finally said, okay, got to do this?
I think it's, for anybody, including myself, it's challenging. It's always challenging. I think a good majority of us have a tendency to hide from our flaws, to run away from our fears, to not stare, you know, the demon down that's in all of us. And yet it's probably one of the best things that we can ever do. And I definitely had to do that within myself and say, all right, you know, I know that I'm a good person, but I also know that I've made far too many mistakes. I can't even chalk this up to youth anymore, you know. I just can't. Like, it's become this sort of pathetic excuse. And that means there's something much bigger going on within me, and I have to face that. And, you know, there were pivotal moments that made me face that I talk about in the book. And I mention those in the book, and, you know, one was one of the most horrifying and embarrassing, humiliating experiences for me ever, and that was a DUI. And that was sort of when I stopped and said, wow, this is enough. And I had to go on my soul-searching journey, and there had to be things that got put aside for that journey. You know, relationships got put aside, and my career took a back seat because it was more about finding myself and getting myself sort of set and being honest with myself and whatever that entailed.
I was going to say, you actually made that the number one priority in your life.
I did, because there was no way that I was ever going to be happy unless I did. There was no way that I was ever going to be the person that I was raised to be, embracing the morals and the values that my parents had instilled in me until I got back in touch with who I was and faced down, you know, my own fears and my own insecurities and my own issues. And once I did that, and it wasn't easy, and it wasn't a short period of time, you know, it took me a while. And I still stumbled during that time period. It's not like all of a sudden I sat down and went, oh, I'm going to be a better me, and I'm going to do some soul searching, and bam, I was good. It was, I still fell on my face a couple of times. But I was able to fall on my face and say, okay, what was this particular thing about? Like, why did I fall on my face about this? And what's the deeper issue within me of why I made this mistake?
How did all the notoriety affect your parents? Because you just said that, you know, you were raised right. You had this loving home with, I mean, they gave you the morals. How did it affect your parents when you were going through the bad days?
You know, you would have to ask them, because I hate speaking for anybody else but myself.
Right.
Trying to give you somewhat of an answer without putting words in their mouth, I can say that they sort of offered me unconditional love and support, which doesn't mean that they stood by and said, oh, you know, you're fine, sweetie, you're great, we love you. It was, you're messing up, this is not who you are, and we love you. And because we love you, you need to figure this out. Yeah, I mean, I felt that I could explore myself and I could take time off, and that I still had that love and that support there. And it definitely helped me. You know, I also had two of the most amazing people in the world, being my parents, to turn to when I was sort of going, oh, my God, this is why I run, or this is why I do this. And, you know, this is really scary stuff to face. Like, you know, I mean, my fear of losing my father is so overwhelming and overpowering, and it's really sort of controlled and dictated a lot of my actions in my life. And I had to sort of come to terms with that, and the only way to come to terms with that was to really sit down with my dad and have long conversations with him about it and cry with him. And, you know, and again, it's not something that happens overnight, and it's not easy. And, you know, last Christmas, my dad had another massive stroke, and, you know, he's definitely not a well man, but I've dealt with this stroke better than I ever have in the past, because I feel like I'm 100% there for him. I feel like I'm I'm making him proud, and that helps you sort of face everything else.
Do you think that the early years, the way you were behaving, was a way of punishing yourself for the success
course.
And the
of course.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, again, I talk about it all in the book, about that, you know, when somebody is self-destructive, it's always for a reason. And you either don't feel like you deserve your success, or there's so many different reasons behind somebody being self-destructive, and you have to get to the bottom of it so that you can leave the bad girl behind and you know, embrace who you are as a woman.
And you've turned a lot of things around in your life. And
thank you.
it's true. And some of the process involved, and you write about this, forgiving others and forgiving yourself. I would think, and I might be wrong, that has to be some of the more challenging stuff to do. I mean, like letting go and forgiving, you know, both parties, you and them. And
yeah, I mean, I think forgiving yourself is probably the hardest. At least for me, it was. I've always been a person that can easily forgive others. I have a tendency to make excuses for people mm-hmm. so that I can forgive them, even when I shouldn't. So it's a little bit of both with forgiving others. You know, you have to, yes, be forgiving, but you also have to be honest with yourself of when you're being too forgiving and when somebody is just a negative influence on your life and you're scared of letting something go, and I had to come to terms with that as well. But forgiving myself was definitely the hardest, because the thing about facing down your own issues and trying to become a better person is that everything that you've ever done that's stupid and humiliating and embarrassing and embarrassment to your family, there's so much guilt that then comes with that. And I used to sort of deal with it by being self-deprecating and making fun of myself, like, and apologizing to everybody in the world about my mistakes. And now I've owned my mistakes, and they're my mistakes. They are mine, and I own those, and they have put me in the place that I am today. And it's ironic because my production company is called No Apologies, because it was like, okay, no more apologies. You know, no more apologies about my actions, no more apologies, because I am who I am. And I have grown so much as a human being that when I make a mistake, it's not going to be at everybody else's expense. It's going to be at my expense, and I'm going to deal with it and look at it honestly and move on from it. I wouldn't be who I am today without those mistakes. And sure, there's some of them that I could definitely do without.
Sure.
But, you know, they help form who I am at this moment. And this moment, I like who I am. At this moment, it allowed me to sit down and be able to write a book, honestly, that I think is funny and poignant and soulful and thoughtful, and will hopefully help anybody else who sort of is going through anything even remotely similar to what I went through.
And, you know, you do make a very interesting observation in the book. The more courageous you become, you wrote, the more courageous a person becomes, the less they need to control the people and be a controlling kind of person or the situation.
Yes.
That was really, I had not heard that before. That was a very interesting observation.
Thank you. That comes from, I think I've always been a little bit of a controlling human being. I like to make sure that I can, you know, control my own destiny and control a situation. And, you know, maybe that was part of the issues with my fear of my father, is because it was so out of my control. I couldn't make him better. I couldn't take away his diabetes, his heart disease. I couldn't take any of it away. I had no control over it. And because I had no control over that, I tried to control everything else even more. And again, I'm not, you know, 100% free of some of these things. I still have control issues. I still tend to be a little controlling within certain things. It's just that now when I start to be too controlling, I sense it and I let it go. It's like the chapter in the book about stalking. You know, I'm clear in it about, okay, if your boyfriend has given you a definitive reason for you to be suspicious, then go ahead. There's no need to sit in your house and kill yourself over with worry about what he's up to.
Right.
Fine, go check on him. But know when to stop. Know when to say, wow, okay, he's exactly where he said he was going to be. And this is where the courageous part comes in. So now let it go. Be courageous. Know that, trust that somebody's not lying to you. Trust that you can trust in them. And you know what? So what? So 6 months later, you know, the guy cheated or whatever. You're going to pick yourself up. You're going to get over it. And you're going to move on. The way that we work as human beings. And, you know, we have this amazing ability to recover from awful things. It's just finding your inner strength to get through it. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I don't have those moments where I'm not suspicious. It just means that when I am, I try to let it go. Or if I have them, I sit down with my partner and I discuss it. I let them know, like, hey, I'm feeling a little insecure about this. Can you help me with it? I don't want to tell you what to do. I don't want to. I just kind of want you to help me through this. In return, it helps me with somebody else's insecurity now. You know, before when anybody showed sort of insecurity around me, I would get very defensive and be like, and wouldn't even deal with it. And now when somebody else is insecure, I'm able to sort of sit there and very calmly be like, okay, I get this. I get why maybe you're feeling insecure, but here's why you don't need to be insecure.
Well, it seems like everything you've gone through and all this work you've done has really expanded you as a human being. I mean, and I'm wondering, this is the last question, I don't mean to keep you, but has it had an effect on your work, on your acting, do you think?
I think the only sort of effect that it's had on me is sort of the priority that my career is to me now. I've worked since I was 10 years old.
Wow.
And it's a 29-year career that, to me, has been an incredibly successful career. To have the amount of TV shows I have under my belt and some amazing movies and be successful for 29 years in one of the hardest businesses there is a huge accomplishment within itself. But I find that now it's not my priority. And it doesn't mean that I don't love acting and I don't love directing and I don't love my career. I do. It's just, I don't think that it's the number one thing for me anymore. You know, family is the number one thing and keeping myself healthy and sane is the number one thing. And if that means taking off work, then that's what it means. If that means, you know, only doing projects that feel light and easy for me or projects that feel challenging to me, then that's what I'm going to do, whatever strikes me at that moment in time. But I'm not going to force myself to work. I was a workaholic, and now I'm not. And, you know, there's the flip side of that, obviously, and the flip side is that, you know, some people will be like, oh, you know, where has she been, and she has no career anymore, and it's kind of like, you know, you have to chuckle through that. You have
right.
to sort of chuckle and go, wow, you know, you don't know. You could call my manager who would tell you that I'm his most frustrating client in the world because I turn down TV shows all the time because I'm like, I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling that particular show. I'm not feeling like on that particular show I want to work 5 days a week, 15 hours a day. I don't think that that's right for me in this moment. And maybe the repercussion of that is that when the time is right, those opportunities won't be there. But that means that there'll be something else that I'm supposed to be doing. You know, it's just not worrying as much. It can't be your one and only focus in life.
Thanks for listening. For more conversations, check the pages of Monday's Pittsburgh Post-Gazette or visit postgazette.com, the area's most visited website. While there, you'll be able to access the Post-Gazette's slate of other weekly podcasts on TV, the movies, food, technology, and other topics. If you have comments or suggestions, send email to hereandnow@post-gazette.com. I'm Patricia Sheridan.